The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, and just before we get into the main stuff, just something that crossed my mind this morning, which just came as a surprise. Apparently, thousands of Iranians have been approaching the foreign ministry requesting asylum in Israel.
That's interesting. I mean,
that is something quite strange. I mean, I know that the foreign ministry has this Farsi platform website that they try to communicate with the Iranian people. They try to use it for communication with the general public in Iran because, as we've said so many times before, and the government has reiterated on numerous occasions, the issue that they have is with the Iranian regime and not with the Iranian people. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be taken quite seriously by people on the street in Iran who have been coming into the foreign ministry making applications through this Farsi website, applying for asylum. Some sob stories, some amazing stories about people who are families are being imprisoned for political activities and who have had enough of, you know, the regime in Iran. Something which really was unexpected for me.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's fascinating because it's what is also so relevant is that no matter what the Iranian government has tried and the animosity that certainly comes out of the Israeli government towards the Iranian government, on a personal level, it just hasn't impacted. Iranian to Israeli right. just hasn't done its job.
True. I mean, true. I think there's two things that really come out. First of all, that it seems as if though the Iranian people are not influenced by the Iranian regime against Israel in a way that one might expect in a country like Iran. And the second thing is that, you know, on a people to people basis, no matter what happens between Iran and Israel, the people of Iran and the people of Israel seem to have some sort of an affinity with each other even. I think that Israelis have no issue with Iranians. I mean, we all understand what the threat is that's coming from Iran. I think we have been led to believe, rightly or wrongly, that the Iranian people don't support this. And so therefore, the general feeling in Israel is, as far as the Iranian people are concerned, we respect them and we actually feel some sympathy for the situation that they find themselves in.
Yeah, really, it's a very, very interesting one. Another big step forward taken today with the reopening of houses of prayer as well as beaches to the public in what Israel is hopefully looking at a post-corona world. What about restaurants? So just give us the latest.
So shuls, churches, mosques, places of prayer from today will be open to the public, up to 50 people attending at any moment in time, maintaining social distancing and wearing masks. Just to let you know that up until now, for the last probably a week or 10 days, prayer has been allowed outdoors in groups of up to 50 people now. So there have been services, minyanim, people going, Muslims gathering for the month of Ramadan, church services and things like that, outdoors, maintaining social distancing with masks mm-hmm. and all the rest of it. Now, that particular style of worship is allowed to move indoors. Exactly the same system, 50 people and all the distancing and the masks and all that kind of thing. But now that will be allowed to move indoors. Beaches will be officially open today. One would have thought over the weekend that the beaches were already open with a number of people who were there. But once again, also special rules applying to the beaches, maintaining social distancing. There is also the issue of restaurants, which will open next week. And once again, special rules will apply to try to separate people from one another, even within the restaurants. I have to add that the restaurant business in Israel is the one that's probably been the worst affected out of all the business environments across the economy. Restaurants have been really, really badly affected. And the expectation is that many of those restaurants who closed down before the corona outbreak will not be reopening because they haven't been able to maintain whatever payments they had to make during this time of close down. Some restaurants have been able to maintain business by delivering orders home, things like that. That's been allowed. But on the whole, the restaurant business has really been badly affected, and it's going to be interesting to see how many restaurants will reopen next week. So there's definitely a movement in a positive direction. Yesterday, I mentioned that because of the heat, school children and teachers were given exemption from wearing masks. And then there was a listener who wrote in saying, is it only the school children or is it the wider public as well? It was even mistaken because I thought it was only applying to schools. But in fact, it does apply for this week, at least, to the broader public in the outdoor area. So you can be without your mask when walking in the heat outside. But as soon as you move into an air conditioned area, a shop, another public space, you're expected to have your mask on. And of course, as we mentioned before, shuls, churches, mosques, you're expected to wear your masks indoors. So that is the official situation at the moment. Also, some sort of a relaxation of the rules on public transportation, where the Minister of Transport, the new Minister of Transport, Mira Regev, has decided that during the morning and evening rush hours, when people could potentially create more risk to each other by gathering and waiting for transport in bus stations and at bus stops, there will be a greater allowance for the number of people who will be able to get onto the transport rather than making people wait outside. So just a relaxation of that rule. I mean, overall, I have to say, I think we're now in our fourth week of reopening. There has been no noticeable increase or spike in the instances of the number of cases of corona.
That's
in fact, there have been
factor.
Two consecutive, two consecutive 12-hour periods yesterday and the day before, in the morning period where there were no cases of corona at all diagnosed, and then later in the day some further. So there's definitely a decrease in the number of cases that people that we're seeing, and of course the number of deaths associated with that. At the current count, 278 people have died, less than 3,000 active cases of corona at the moment. And way less than 100 people, 38 I think are being intubated at the moment, and certainly less than 100 people in hospital getting medical treatment. So definitely a massive reduction. And it's expected that other facilities such as swimming pools and hotels, including their dining rooms and pool areas and after-school activities, will begin to open also with what we call the purple standard guidelines. So rules according to the Ministry of Health about how people should protect themselves. Just one last comment, because I know we've spoken so much about corona over the last few weeks, but what's noticeable for me is that, you know, we're all expecting to go into a new norm where corona will really be part of our lifestyle. And yet what I've noticed from our reopening is that people are getting very, very quickly back to what used to be way before corona. Mm-hmm. So we're almost like forgetting the whole social distancing and that. I think people are just very eager to put it all to one side, to park it away, to do what we need to do, but to get back to the kissing and the hugging and the getting close and all that kind of stuff. I think that, you know, I just sense that people are enthusiastic just to get back to what we used to know once upon a time.
I think that is absolutely true. I think good and bad, but true nevertheless. I found this interesting is that a lottery has been opened for those wanting to pray at the Kotel over the festival of Shavuot. How is this going to work?
So because of the fact that there's a limit as to the number of people who can attend the prayer area at the Kotel, and for people who've been around at the time of Shavuot or who've seen pictures, one will know that thousands and thousands and thousands of people gather at the Kotel on the early morning of Shavuot. Traditionally, there is the Tikkun Leil Shavuot, the overnight learning period where people do not sleep. And then it's quite traditional in Jerusalem for people to literally descend from all corners of the city, walking in the early hours of the morning for early morning prayer service at the Kotel, reading the Megillah, of course, the Book of Ruth, and also praying Shavuot. This year, of course, that will not be allowed because of the social distancing restrictions. So the Kotel has actually opened up a website, and you can sign up and you can put your name in the hat to be drawn out in a lottery style as to whether you will be one of those lucky winners who will be allowed to enter the prayer service. A limited number of tickets only apply. It doesn't apply to children under the age of 11 who will be admitted in addition to those who have won the lottery tickets. And so you can go and sign up on the Kotel website, and you can be potentially one of the lucky winners to actually go and pray for Shavuot at the Kotel, which is so traditional.
Amazing. Amazing that it has, that this is where it's at. Also amazing was that the first ever flight from Abu Dhabi has landed in Israel at Ben Gurion Airport. What was the purpose of the flight?
So, yeah, this was an Etihad flight. Etihad flight. A plane arrived yesterday without the logos, just a kind of plain white package plane, no evidence of where it had come from or going
brand.
To.
Yeah.
Absolute no name brand, but this had been coordinated with the special coordinator for the Middle East process, Nikolai Meladinov, and this was carrying a whole cargo load of supplies for humanitarian aid for Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, donated by the United Arab Emirates government for those Palestinians, coordinated with the Israeli government, of course, to allow that plane to land at Ben-Gurion Airport and for the goods to be transported as soon as possible towards the West Bank or Gaza, as the case may be. But this is just another step in what we sense is a kind of an opening up between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. And there have been so many examples of warming ties, of cooperation, of non-diplomatic relations, if we can call it that, because, of course, the critical issue here is that Israel and the UAE do not have diplomatic relations, and therefore the concept of a flight between two countries, a direct flight between two countries that do not have diplomatic relations, is something which wouldn't have been contemplated in days and years gone by. But these days it does happen, it is happening, and it does show a definite warming of ties between the Gulf states and between Israel in all kinds of ways. And this particular flight, even though it came in as a no-name brand and no one might have been able to recognize it on the ground, was very much an Etihad airline flight. It brought some good news for those people who really need the goods that it was carrying. So good in all respects from this flight.
Amazing that. And also what's interesting is they recently discovered 2,000-year-old underground structure near the Temple Mount. And that's now been revealed to the public. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so this has obviously been excavated for some time because there's some substantial excavations that have gone on below ground. But it was revealed this week to the general public in order to coincide with the Jerusalem Day, Yom Yerushalayim, which we will celebrate on Friday and which we'll talk a little bit more about tomorrow. But this is a discovery of some quite lavish sort of structure below ground. And when I say below ground, I mean below ground. In other words, the way that Jerusalem is constructed, and particularly the area around the Temple Mount, is that over the years, different civilizations have built structures upon whatever was there before, sometimes without even realizing that there are things below ground underneath what they're building on. And so it's been quite common for archaeologists to delve deeper and deeper into the layers of Jerusalem and to dig down and to find different civilizations layer by layer under what is currently the ground level, and particularly in that area around the Temple Mount. And what was happening was that there was this Byzantine-era structure that was being excavated, and they got to the floor of the structure and they thought that they'd reached the bedrock. And then all of a sudden they kind of just scratched a little bit further and found that within the bedrock was this whole room structure that had been carved out of the bedrock, apparently dating back to the Second Temple era, which would have been around first century of the Common Era, bearing in mind that the Second Temple was destroyed in 70 CE. And so it would have been in that era of the Second Temple, only 30 meters from the Temple Mount. And quite a lot of information has been derived from this, that this was quite close to the street. And, you know, typically in those temple days, there would have been those people who've come for prayer purposes, and then there would have been a whole market area that surrounded the temple where people would trade and take advantage of the crowds of people who'd come along to the temple. And it's not exactly sure what this structure was used for, but it clearly was very near the street and very near the Temple Mount. And so there's been a lot of surmising as to exactly what it would have been used for, but apparently very lavish with lots and lots of artifacts.
Amazing.
That have been dug out of it. So very fascinating indeed.
It really is. And to bring ancient Jerusalem back to modern days is really just a phenomenon. Absolutely incredible. Anthony Reich, this is where we love and leave you. We'll speak to you tomorrow morning.